Chapter 9. I led us deeper and deeper into the forest as the horrible sound of demons roared and squealed all around us, and their terrifying, nightmarish wails bounced off the trees and made me feel as if we were surrounded. I wasn't sure exactly how far from Ithaca we were, but it couldn't be more than 2 or 3 miles.
Alex, wait!
Shay called out softly, and I whipped around with my sword at the ready. There wasn't any danger, though, just the image of my phoenix wife leaning against a tree, with her injured foot hovering a few inches off the ground.
My ankle! It's getting harder to traverse the tree roots and stones!
Let me help, I said, and sheathed my sword so I could carry her on my back, piggyback style. Because she was so compact, it actually might make things faster this way. I'm gonna run, so hold on, okay? I felt Shay nod behind me, and her arms looped under mine, as if she was some kind of living backpack strapped to my shoulders. I hiked her further up my back, and then I took off at a steady pace in the direction where I knew Ithaca was, based on the stream I could hear bubbling away. To my knowledge, the only stream in the area this far north of the village square was the one that cut through Ithaca Estate. If I could find it, then I could follow it back to the manor house and get us behind the gates reinforced with the goddess's conviction, thanks to more of Aventol's magic stone lanterns. I nearly killed myself trying to fix them by ham-handedly pouring all of my willpower into keeping the manor house and all who resided in it safe from harm. Now was the time to put it to the test, and when I finally found the stream, I picked up the pace.
Alex!
Shay whispered, and then pointed over to my left. Across the stream were dozens of demon eyes peering at me through the reddish gloom, and even though they had tentacles on their backs like squids, none of them seemed inclined to go for a swim. A distant part of me wondered if they were partial to fresh water instead of salt. There was always a lot of talk about the demon tide event that seemed to nearly wipe out all of Aventol's citizens until the goddess blessed her ashes with the power to vanquish the scourge, as Jenner might say. Given how a tide usually came from the ocean, and how Aventol's ocean was actually fresh water, I figured the salt in the stream must be what was acting as a deterrent. Whatever the case, I was grateful they were hesitant to cross. Maybe I should consider some type of moat for Ithaca if the chance arose. For now, the boundary of the stream was a godsend as I carried Shay, who wasn't heavy by any means, but step after step was slowly beginning to take a toll on my stamina. And it was nice the horde of monsters didn't, or couldn't, cross the rushing water separating us.
Can we rest, just for a quick moment?
Shay asked, and her voice was taut and rusty.
Just to rest my foot.
I stopped immediately at the pain she tried to disguise in her voice, and I set her down on a fallen log so she could prop her foot up on a small boulder. Twigs and branches snapped nearby and kept me on edge, but Shay's poor ankle was swollen and painful-looking from having to dangle in the air for so long. I was sure my jostling didn't help matters, and who knew how long she'd been biting back her discomfort as I jogged through the forest. "Does it need to be redone?" I asked her, as I examined the wrapping around her foot. She'd upgraded from the torn scraps of my old shirt to a proper bandage, but some of the wrapping was starting to look loose.
"Yes. But I do not want to do that here,"
she said in a hushed voice that still sounded loud in the eerie red sunlight. "You feel like you can carry on?" I asked, as the hair stood up on the back of my neck.
"Yes,"
she said, and I helped her stand up. Before I could turn around and let her climb on my back again, though, something wrapped itself tightly around my shin and yanked me to the ground as if I was a sack of flour.
"Alex!"
Shay screamed. I flopped onto my back, only to see a fat, squat demon anchored into the ground like some type of tree stump, and its thrashing tentacles were reeling me in, kind of like that giant yellow flower trying to eat the kid in the movie Jumanji. At least, I assumed it wanted to eat me because this demon had a mandible like those of the stag beetles. Which was to say, large and dripping with a combination of drool and ichor, and snapping with the kind of force that could break a telephone pole in half. The demon sucked me in via a retractable tongue-like tentacle that was slowly pulling me in like a fish on a line. I thrashed and attempted to reach for my sword, but it was currently lying halfway underneath me, so I twisted to the side in order to free my blade from its scabbard. With a strong whack, I managed to slice through the greasy tentacle tethering me to the creature, and it wailed as it sucked the rest of its mangled appendage back into its gaping maw. "That's new," I grumbled to myself, and shot back up to my feet so I could ash the fucker with one slash across its bloated gut. This was a mistake, because the wound wasn't enough to kill it outright, and the demon's innards spilled all over the ground in a stinking heap that smelled like rancid hot dumpster juice, which made my eyes water and my gag reflex kick in. I still had to keep it from respawning, though, so with a swift stab through the stump demon's heart, the squalling mass of guts and tentacles finally crumbled away to ash.
Alex!
Shay called out again, and I whipped around to the sight of the Phoenix woman twirling her sling above her head again as the demons from across the stream tried to hopscotch their way across on some of the boulders poking up above the rushing water. Shay let one of her well-aimed rocks fly, and it hit one of the demons square in the face, which caused it to lose its balance and be whisked away by the stream with a splash and an angry shrieking yowl. The other demons didn't even glance at their fallen comrade and continued on despite the power and accuracy of Shay's deadly projectiles. I ran to her aid, just as one of the demons decided it had had enough of playing hopscotch and leapt the rest of the way across, landed on the muddy bank, and galloped straight for the Phoenix woman. "Shay!" I bellowed, right when she stumbled back and fell to the ground. The demon lunged for her, but she rolled swiftly away. "Not my wife, you fuck!" I made a flying leap at the creature as it got ready to pounce, and I brought my blade down along its back with two hands. Several of its green-gray tentacles fell to the dirt in small ash heaps, and with a screech, the demon bucked me off and to the side. My sword went flying, and the pissed-off demon tackled me the rest of the way to the ground.
"Alex!"
Shay screamed again, and she launched one stone after another at the creature's head as I wrestled to keep its snapping jaws from tearing out my throat.
Rah!
A familiar battle cry suddenly ripped through the air, and I'd never heard a more beautiful sound than the Xena warrior yell Zoe made right before she was about to get her groove on and fuck some shit up. Sure enough, one of my catwife's favored throwing knives lodged itself right between the demon's eyes, and it was just the thing I needed to kick the bastard off me. When I got back to my feet, Zoe was just dismounting Prosper and pulling her curved katana-like blade from the scabbard across her back so she could join the fray. I rushed over to where my own fallen sword was and snatched it up so I could finish what Zoe started and ashed the demon through the heart. I was so glad to see Zoe in her typical tight pants and armored skirt combo, with her black hair flying as she twirled around like an acrobat and incapacitated another demon. The reunion could wait, however, as more and more demons became brave and attempted to cross the river. Now that Shay was back on her feet, well, foot, she was attempting to keep the demons crossing the stream at bay with her rock sling, but for every demon she sent into the water, there was another one waiting to take its place, until there were about five of them on our side of the stream. Prosper helped a lot, and he would rear back on two legs while he used his remaining four to kick and stomp at any demons unlucky enough to be within range. But eventually, there became too many for even him and his four multifaceted eyes to keep track of. "Everyone, back to back!" I yelled, and I intercepted a barbed tentacle that was aimed for Zoe's neck with a slash of my blade. The four of us ended up forming a tight knot in the middle as the ring of about 10 or so demons tightened their ever-shrinking circle around us.
"Alex, what do we do?"
Shay asked, as she let another one of her stones fly. It exploded against a demon's skull, but the beast just shook it off and kept coming forward. "Shay, take Prosper back to Ithaca. Zoe and I'll be right behind you."
"I will not leave the two of you,"
she shouted, as if the thought was offensive.
"I wouldn't be able to ride anyway with my foot, so you're just going to have to be content with my presence, Alex Brightwood."
Prosper snorted too, as if he was agreeing with Shay that he was here for the long haul, whether I liked it or not. "Okay, here's the plan then," I said, as I sidestepped another barbed tentacle and slashed off a demon's arm. "Yeah, Shay, try to aim for the eyes while Zoe and I try to push them backward toward the stream. And Prosper, make a hole for us, would you?" I mentally projected to the canterfly what I'd envisioned, and Prosper stamped his hooves in a determined manner I knew meant he wouldn't let me down. Then the canterfly squared up against the demons directly across from the stream and bowled through them like a wrecking ball that would have made Miley Cyrus jealous. "Go on! Let's put them on the back foot!" I led the charge by rushing through the hole in the circle Prosper made, so we were no longer surrounded. And then Zoe and I began fighting them toward the stream in tandem, as if we were hacking through an overgrown jungle with a pair of machetes. One of the demons on my right lunged, but I could tell this was just the distraction, and the real threat was actually on my left, where one asshole had a barbed tentacle poised and ready. I didn't even give the bastard a chance as I guarded my left flank, and then I brought my sword up to turn my defensive maneuver into an offensive one, just like Zoe had trained me to do. The spike of the barb clashed off my blade with a metal ringing noise, and I lunged forward so I could ash the demon in the heart with a sickening squelch. Suddenly, a loud crashing through the trees could be heard, followed by another howl. This howl, however, wasn't one of the subterranean ones that heralded the onslaught of more demons. It sounded more human than that, and it was followed by a series of high-pitched yips and yodels. Arvid, the giant sloth man, burst through the trees with one of those stump demons held high above his head, like Donkey Kong wielding one of his iconic barrels. It seemed as if he managed to dislodge the demon barnacle from where it was anchored into the ground with his brute strength alone. And with another mighty roar, he launched the demon into the rushing stream where it splashed down with a squeal as it was washed away by the current. Two other figures rushed into the fray on Arvid's heels, one short and the other tall and wearing what looked like a brown painter's cap, and they both had the markings of a raccoon with ringed bushy tails, mask-like markings around their eyes, and pointed black ears rimmed with white. They were also carrying what appeared to be a shovel and a garden hoe, respectively, and they were whacking demons left and right as they yipped and yowled their fierce battle cries. With the additional reinforcements, the demons' ranks were broken and scattered, which left the four remaining ones isolated from each other and prevented them from coordinating their attacks. The demon with one weeping eye I was currently facing hissed and growled, and then it jumped at me in one powerful surge of energy like a rabid animal lashing out one last time in desperation. Tick. I startled when I suddenly sensed the time trance so close to the surface, even though I wasn't seconds away from mortal peril this time. Sure, I had Big, Scary, and Hairy sailing through the air, hell-bent on ripping me apart, but I'd been in worse situations before, so it was surprising the time trance was triggered. Whatever the case, I was thankful for it now, and I tried to hang on to that slippery thread of focus to allow the power to manifest. Tick. The demon lingered in the air for just long enough, and right as time snapped back, I took one step forward, brought my blade up, and used the demon's forward momentum to slice the fucker from top to tail, where it then hit the ground in two distinct piles of destroyed ashes. Then, as quickly as it came, the red sun lifted its oppressive bloody blanket, and life returned to the muted landscape once more. Any demons I didn't manage to ash molded back into the earth like weird claymation figurines, and the ones I did kill blew away with the sudden sweet breeze sweeping through the valley, as if Mother Nature herself was trying to brush off the unnaturalness of the demon scourge. I blinked in the dazzling light as the danger that surrounded us moments ago evaporated like it had never even existed.
"It's over!"
Shay exclaimed, and my attention was drawn to where both of my wives stood exhausted, battered, but otherwise whole in the aftermath. Zoe sheathed her blade, as I did the same, and when our eyes locked, I sprinted toward her so I could gather her in my arms. "You came!" I gasped, and practically crushed her to my chest. By the way she was clinging back just as hard, I could tell the battle had shaken her as well.
"I have never felt as terrified as I have when the sun was red, and I saw Prosper arrive alone,"
she confessed in my ear, and I rubbed her back to ease the fine tremors I could feel racing through her as the adrenaline worked its way through her system. Then, as one, we both turned to Shay and pulled her into our embrace. "Are you okay?" I asked the Phoenix Woman, and took care to support most of her weight because her ankle was no doubt probably killing her by now.
"I am alive, and all of us are intact. There is nothing more I want or need,"
she said as she burrowed her petite frame between Zoe and me and held on to us like we were her life raft. I could relate. The three of us spent another moment just holding each other, and our heart rates finally came back down to normal levels as we reaffirmed to ourselves that we were all okay. If it wasn't for the fact that Shay really did need to get off her feet, I would have kept us there in our little bubble forever if I could. But I could tell standing was quickly becoming excruciating for her, so I broke our collective embrace in order to lower her gently onto a boulder.
What happened?
Zoe asked the Phoenix Woman, as she crouched down and gently lifted Shay's hurt foot onto her bent knee.
A silly and embarrassing accident.
Shay sighed and then hissed slightly when Zoe prodded the swollen appendage.
I'm afraid I might have made it worse.
Is the lady all right, Master?
A rough voice called out from behind me. I turned around to where Arvid and the two raccoon-faced men were standing patiently while my wives and I all had our mini-reunion. The shorter of the two new allies I was unfamiliar with stepped forward with a concerned expression on his masked face. He had the shovel he was using as a weapon stuck into the ground like a staff, and his taller friend held the garden hoe slung over his shoulder like a battle axe, and I immediately knew who they must be. "She will be okay," I answered the shorter man's question, and then I offered my hand to who was undoubtedly one of my new farmhands I'd yet to meet. "Are you Bowden?"
"Mel, actually, Master,"
the raccoon man named Mel said as he clasped my forearm in greeting.
"This is my brother, Bowden."
Bowden set his garden weapon against a tree, adjusted his cap, and then stepped forward so he could clasp my arm as well.
"Nice to meet you, Master Brightwood," the taller man said, in a mellow voice as smooth as his brother's was rough. "Mel and I have been most anxious to make your acquaintance."
"I'm glad I'm finally meeting you both, too." I grinned at each brother as I rubbed the back of my neck.
But just call me Alex, okay? You guys really helped us out just now, and you didn't have to come. You all could have stayed in the manor until the red sun ended. Unless... is there something wrong with the lanterns around the wall again, Arvid?"
"Wall, well,"
the big sloth man said in his usual monotone. "Is Jenner all right?" I pressed, as I racked my brain for reasons as to why they would all risk themselves like that.
"Jenner, well,"
Arvid droned again, and smiled with his familiar, placid expression. Then he bobbed his big, shaggy head up and down.
"All well."
It was kind of odd that this gentle giant could turn all incredible Hulk, and if I hadn't witnessed it myself, I wouldn't think it was possible he could rip demons apart with his bare hands.
"Then why?"
I started, but the taller raccoon brother, Bowden, stepped forward and cleared his throat.
"Ahem. Beg pardon, Mr. Alex, but I think you will find that our safety was second priority to you and your wives,"
he interrupted in his suede-like voice.
"Look, I know I technically own you all as property according to the Aventol duelist laws, but let me make this clear."
I made eye contact with each of the brothers and Arvid to make sure they were tuned in for what I was going to say next.
"You are never obligated to put yourself at risk for my sake. I will never ask that of you for as long as you work for me."
The brothers exchanged looks of shock, and Mel clenched his jaw and clapped his taller brother on the shoulder.
"I told you, brother," the shorter man gruffed out in his gravel voice. "The rumors of this traveler's fairness and decency are true."
"You were right."
Bowden nodded to his brother and then turned to me, removed his cap, and bowed low at the waist.
"And you must accept my apologies, Asher Brightwood. My brother explained to me we would find working under you agreeable because of the stories surrounding your status. They say you dueled a cruel Asher so you could rescue his wife from being dragged through the streets by a collar around her neck. That true?"
"It is," I said, as I cast my gaze over to my catwife.
The memory of the first time I saw her was a vivid one, and our interaction was dramatic since I basically did what Bowden said and unwittingly entered my first death match against her meat-headed ex.
"Then you must forgive me. I was skeptical at first because a lot of Ashers don't consider the rest of us no ranks as people like you do. But you have put my fears to rest."
The raccoon man placed a hand over his heart in the form of a salute.
"You don't have to apologize," I said. "We literally just met, so I understand how you'd be worried. I know a lot of duelists can be cruel, so it was a legitimate concern you had."
"What my brother is trying to say, sir, is that it wasn't an obligation, see?"
Mel stepped forward as he gestured with a placating hand.
"'Twas loyalty and fairness, and we, the Turpin brothers, offer it freely."
I
rubbed the back of my neck again as I felt my ears warm slightly. For these people to already be so loyal to me so quickly was... I didn't have words for it.
You should not be so surprised, husband,
Zoe said over my shoulder, as she helped Shay over so the both could be a part of the conversation.
Your status is not the only thing about you the folk of Neta Isle have come to know about Alex Brightwood.
How do you know? I asked Zoe, as I supported Shay on her other side so she was balanced between us in a way that kept all pressure off her ankle.
There is a lot of talk in public gatherings, and the audience stands during the Icarian races were especially rife with gossip,
she said and swished her tail.
You also made quite the spectacle in beheading Ren, and you stoked the rumors even more. Some say you have been having an affair with Shelia and challenged Ren so you could liberate her from his famed cruelty.
Really? I haven't been here for very long. How could I have had an affair with Shay? I looked down into the Phoenix woman's laughing emerald eyes and snickered.
People tend to like stories with romantic heroes in them, my Alex.
Shay chimed in and put a hand up to her smiling lips. But this caused her to overbalance, and she reflexively tried to catch herself by putting weight on her bad foot.
Oh!
Ooh, come here, I said, and scooped her up under her knees. You've done enough damage. And by the way, I had no idea you could use a rock sling. That was way awesome.
Thank you.
Shay blushed and looped her arm comfortably around my neck.
I'm sorry this is such a bother, but I'm afraid I may have done more damage to the silly ankle than I realized.
Is it broken? I asked as my eyebrows furrowed in worry.
No, just sprained,
Zoe said with a matching frown.
But she needs to stay off it so it will heal properly.
Is there anything we can do to help?
Bowden asked as he replaced the cap on his head. By the way, where's your carriage?
Oh, that's right, I said, as I looked back the way Shay and I had traveled. We had to leave it back on the main road. Hey, Prosper!
The canterfly whistled when I called to him and trotted closer. Then he uncoiled his muzzle and ruffled my hair in a way I knew was a sign of affection from the proud beast.
Thanks for having my back, bud, I said, and projected a nice soapy bath with one of those coarse-haired brushes I saw in the barn to him as a reward for his help. Do you remember where we left the carriage?
Prosper tilted his glossy black head as if he was thinking, and then he stamped his front hoof and trotted determinedly past all of us toward the south.
I guess he does remember, I said to the brothers. He's still wearing his hitch, so if the demons didn't fuck with anything, the carriage should be all set for him to pull.
Carriage,
Arvid said, and began his wide, loping stride after the canterfly.
Leave it to us, sir,
Mel said. And Bowden nodded with enthusiasm. Then the raccoon brothers were on their way after the slothman.
Now, let's get Shay back to the manor, I said to Zoe, and we followed the caravan downstream and back toward the carriage.
I thought about continuing on foot the rest of the way to the manor, but I figured the carriage was probably a bit closer, and Shay needed something where she could prop her foot up. The long benches in the carriage would do that, so that made doubling back the best choice in the end.
How was Ithaca when the sun went red? I asked Bowden after I switched Shay over to Zoe for a piggyback ride, while I caught up to the brothers at the front of our caravan.
Some of the chapel was damaged and the fence around the pastures as well, the tall raccoon man said.
Man, Jenner and I just mended those fences, I huffed out an annoyed breath.
Okay, how about the mill? Is it functional?
The roof needs to be redone and a few minor issues could use fixin', but those are purely cosmetic, he said.
That's good, I said, and my mind was already leaping ahead to what needed to be done on Ithaca. Things had been so crazy lately, I was honestly looking forward to working with my hands and letting my mind and body fall into the rhythm of manual labor.
Mr. Bowden,
Shay piped up from her place on Zoe's back.
Now that you have had the time to study the estate, which of the fields do you think gets the best sunlight?
What are you trying to grow?
The shorter brother grunted out as we all continued through the dense forest.
The coley plant. I know your kin from the Isle of Lean are gifted with things that grow in the soil, and so I welcome any and all expertise.
Sure thing, m'lady,
Bowden replied graciously and tipped the brim of his painter's cap.
Also, how good are you with carpentry? I asked, just as the carriage came into view, and I heard Prosper whistle triumphantly.
My brother and I have done our fair share of building structures, if that is what you're referring to, the tall raccoon man said.
Are you able to come up with a design made of all glass that'll be used to house plants during the cold part of the season? I pressed.
An all-glass house? How interesting, he mused as he rubbed his small chin.
Would this be omite glass?
If possible, yes, I said, as I opened the carriage door for Zoe so we could both help Shay get situated. Zoe crawled in next, and I saw how she tenderly propped the other woman's ankle up in her lap while the Phoenix woman sat long ways on the cushioned bench seat.
I'll talk this over with Mail, Bowden said with a sparkle in his russet brown eyes. We should have some measurements and a correspondence supplies list for you shortly.
Can you also check on what other supplies we might need? I asked after I climbed up into the cabin of the carriage.
I have a feeling these repairs might require more supplies. What we had on hand to make the first repairs was already pretty sparse, and now that we have the funds, it's time to start putting them to good use.
Hear, hear, sir!
Mel's rough rumble could be heard up top in the driver's seat above us.
Leave it to us,
Bowden nodded his head in one short jerk.
We are most happy when we get to work with our hands and show off our skills.
I think we're going to get along just great, I said to the genial raccoon man.
Remind me to talk to you about building a moat.
A moat?
He asked, with another interested sparkle in his intelligent eyes.
Later, I grinned, before I shooed him away good-naturedly to where he joined his brother on top of the carriage.
Then we all headed toward the manor as one caravan, with Arvid leading the way and clearing the road of any fallen branches or debris left behind from the Red Sun episode. The bridge leading up to the land the estate encompassed came into view a short while later, and I was relieved that it seemed to be as undamaged and sturdy as ever. The modest mill next to it, however, looked even more worse for wear, with big gaping patches missing from its thatched roof. But the rest of the property, including the verdant rolling pastures, the gnarled woot fruit orchards, and finally the ivy-covered manor, were a much welcomed sight for my sore eyes. Home.
Are we here?
Shay mumbled as she blinked awake from the short doze she dropped into during the brief ride. The poor thing looked pale and exhausted, and when I glanced down at her swollen ankle, I wondered if we should get someone experienced beyond my limited first aid to take a look at it.
Yes, my darling,
Zoe murmured as she gently pulled the Phoenix woman upright so she was sitting on the bench properly.
Let me get out first, I said, and then hopped out of the carriage so I could be the one to support Shay when she got out.
Who is that, husband?
Zoe asked me when she stepped down from the carriage and stood on Shay's other side so she could support the Phoenix woman under one arm.
What?
I asked, and turned to where she was indicating with a flick of her tail. A cloaked figure limped up the small slope toward the carriage house where we were all standing. My knee-jerk reaction was to drag us all behind the manor's enchanted walls, but when he lowered his hood, I recognized him at the same time as Shay gasped. But before we could do anything further, the figure outstretched one hand and then collapsed on the ground in a motionless heap.